When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Welcome back to another episode of The Mac Rumor Show. I am Dan. We have Hartley here as usual. Hartley, good evening. We're flipping this around this time. But our main topic for today is really interesting because of your exact location of where you are right now. So you are in South Korea, and you just told me that you got to check out what for the first time?
So these are the new Samsung foldable devices, which, of course, you have had plenty of time to take a look at.
I have one right here, which is great. But this entire episode isn't about the Samsung foldable, so nobody worry. It is about Apple's foldable, though, and they do have some crossover. So what I wanted to do, Harley, was get your thoughts on those foldables, and then we'll talk about all of the recent rumors for Apple's upcoming foldable, which I'm super excited for.
Well, first of all, of course, we got all these marketing images from Samsung, and they had quite a good sequence for unveiling the device, I thought, to really convey how much thinner it was. And I was blown away by the design, but feeling it in the hand, it really was incredibly impressive. I think it is the best hardware that Samsung has ever made. And I think it's very interesting, as we'll discuss, that actually it looks like Apple can't match it. It looks like the first generation Apple foldable that's coming next year will not be able to stand up to this year's Samsung foldable in a number of regards with regards to its hardware.
Which different ways do you think they can't match?
They're missing a camera. They're missing a camera for a start on the back, and they won't be able to get it as thin. I mean, the Samsung, the latest Fold 7 is stupidly thin. I mean, that is 4.2 millimeters when unfolded. That's thinner than an iPad Pro.
It's kind of remarkable that, excuse me, my throat. It's kind of remarkable that Apple hasn't put a ton of priority into that, considering how thin some of these other devices like the iPad Pro that you just mentioned are. Is it going to be around that size then is what we're thinking?
I think that Apple has prioritized this, and that's ultimately why they're debuting the iPhone 17 Air this year. But the fact of the matter is that Samsung has been iterating on these devices now for years, and has a lot of experience in getting into this grind generation over generation of trying to deliver these improvements. I mean, I think I remember Samsung put up a slide showing the weight reduction with each generation successively. Apple just hasn't had an opportunity to do that. So I think it's understandable, but it does raise a question for me, which is, we're always told, and I feel like we've been told for ultimately over a decade, that Apple doesn't do things first, but they do things the best. Is that really going to be the case with this foldable when you look at how good this Samsung hardware is?
That's a great question. It seems like obviously the answer is leaning more towards no, but I would love to hear from you in different ways on how you think Apple can at least beat Samsung in different ways for at least its first go around this year or next year.
Well, it looks like the main differentiator that Apple is going after is the crease-free display. This has been supposedly the reason why Apple hasn't gone for a foldable sooner, or at least the main reason, because all existing foldables have plastic displays with a very prominent crease in the middle. And this is something that has improved generation over generation. I mean, I remember taking a look at Samsung's first foldables, and it was really quite a deep crease that did inhibit your experience a little bit because you were aware of it. You could feel it under your finger. And you were just aware of a slight distortion. Of course, it's more prominent when the device's display is off.
Yeah.
But apparently this wasn't good enough for Apple. So Apple is looking at trying to almost totally eliminate that crease. The rumors sort of disagree on this insofar as some reports say that the crease will be totally eliminated and not visible, and others will say it will be almost totally eliminated. Now, I'm inclined to believe those. Because I think there's got to be something. That's a very vulnerable part of the display. And the way that Apple is achieving this is through its hinge system. They are using a Samsung display, very similar to how they've used Samsung OLED displays when they moved to OLED on the iPhone X. Samsung is always its partner for pioneering display technology on the iPhone. And this year is no different, but the hinge system is where Apple is looking to outdo Samsung.
Hey guys, just want to let you know this episode of the Mac Rumors Show is sponsored by Copilot. You know your fitness tracker keeps tabs on your steps, or your weather app warns you about surprise rain? Well, who's keeping an eye on your money? That's where Copilot Money comes in. It's basically a personal CFO living in your pocket. I've been using Copilot for a while now, and I actually really like checking my finances for once. Seriously, I used to just avoid all of my financial apps because I thought ignorance was bliss. But everything's in one clean dashboard. Every transaction, every balance, all laid out clearly. No more guessing where my money went this month. And when I say clean, I mean it. This is one of the best designed apps that I've ever used, especially in the finance department. Everything looks incredible, and it's super easy to use. Also, I'm clearly not the only one who thinks this, as it was an Apple Design Awards finalist in 2024. And what I love is how personal it feels. I set up my own spending categories, get real-time alerts, and their new savings goal feature is one of my favorites. I can actually watch my vacation fund grow without feeling guilty for spending on dinner once in a while. Plus, Copilot is privacy first and totally ad-free. They don't sell your data ever. They just have a straightforward subscription, which honestly feels pretty refreshing these days. So thank you to Copilot Money for sponsoring this episode. And get started today at copilot.money and get 2 months free by entering MacRumors2 when starting your free trial. Again, get a 2 month free trial when you use the referral code MacRumors2 today. Thanks, Copilot, for sponsoring this episode.
So we did this a little earlier, but for those of you who are listening, if you get a moment to check out the YouTube video version of this, you can see what I'm talking about. This is the Oppo Find N5. It came out earlier this year. This was highly regarded, and obviously Oppo was definitely praising how well they did with its crease elimination, or, you know, at least they tried to. So this is with the display off. It's very fingerprinty. I'm sorry about that, but you can definitely still see the crease when the display is off, and obviously in the right, you know, light, if you catch it, it's very prominent. You think Apple can get better than that? Now, here's Samsung. This is with the display on, but we'll turn it off. Like, it's, oops, sorry, it didn't turn off. It's just as prominent. It's probably even more so. Like, I just, have a really hard time believing that you're going to get rid of that completely. I don't doubt Apple in the sense that maybe one day they'll figure it out, but I just can't see how it's going to be completely eliminated. So I do agree with you and those other rumors that were like, it's going to be close, but it's not completely gone. Like, how? I don't even know how you can imagine to do that.
Apple knows that people are going to put this device side by side with mm-hmm. Samsung's, and Apple needs something to be able to prove that it has outdone Samsung, because mm-hmm. ostensibly in every other way it hasn't. It can't match the number of cameras in the device. It can't match its thinness, and it can't match the fact that Samsung has delivered seven generations of these things by now. So in having a crease-free display, Apple can actually tout something that it has engineered itself and has sort of taken the lead on. Supposedly, the way that they're doing this is with a system of metal plates that sort of disperse and control the stress under the display. But these are mechanical components, so it's a little bit abstract to really understand how that makes a difference to the display itself. But I think it's really interesting. It'll be interesting to see quite how much of a difference that makes, because it would be weirdly un-Apple-like to have these plastic displayed devices open in Apple stores and you can see that crease when you walk by. Like, it just doesn't feel very Apple. So I totally understand why for them it's really important to make it feel just like you've got a tiny iPad.
Yeah. I still think they're going to sell quite a bit of these, especially if it's anywhere remotely close to, you know, what we have here. And then, you know, obviously layer in the software experience and the integrations and ecosystem. And I don't know. I just think it's still going to do well, but it is going to be a little disappointing that a first gen product is going to be, you know, potentially lesser in comparison to Samsung in terms of hardware. Like, even with the, you know, Vision Pro, like, there are other products that are out there that probably do some things better than Apple and were a better value and better thing to buy. But there's no doubt that the Vision Pro had everyone beat in terms of the hardware and like the wow factor in the engineering. And so, like, I'm expecting that with this. And I really hope they can get the crease completely eliminated, because I think that would provide a pretty huge wow factor for some people. But I think that the people that are looking at this, the everyday consumer, that is like, you know what, that's pretty cool. Like, I kind of want the ability for my phone to turn into an, I've never seen this before, I've never used one before. Like, I don't think anyone's going to care if there's a fold and I, or there's a crease. And I especially have said numerous times, yeah, you can see it. We've talked about it a million times, but you don't really notice it when the screen's on and your eyes, you just kind of get past it pretty quickly. So I'm curious as like the everyday person, what they think about this and if they even care if this crease is eliminated or not.
Another possibility is that Apple could undercut Samsung in terms of price. So the Z Fold 7 starts at $2,000. It's entirely possible that Apple could come in at $1,800.
That's shocking.
I mean, I imagine Samsung would pretty quickly match that if Apple did that. But it's all a question of exactly how they're going to position this. I imagine they will go straight in at 2000.
Yeah. And honestly, Samsung was already selling these for a lot less beforehand. I think they were at $1,799. And then this year they raised it back up because of the new features and the new engineering and hardware. So it started at 2000. After a few years, it started to go down a little bit. And then they just bumped it back up this year. So it'll be curious. I don't know if Apple will go more, but they're not going to go less. That's my feeling.
And I think they can, to some extent, get away with it. Because a Pro Max is a pretty different device to what this is offering. This is a first generation product. It's ostensibly for early adopters, a little bit like the Vision Pro. And then Apple's actually not expecting to sell a huge amount of these compared to other iPhone models. And if you can pick up an iPhone, this will be next year, so an iPhone 18 for $800. I mean, it's a pretty big difference to go all the way up to a $2,000 foldable. But people will do that. Plenty of people will. Plenty of people only buy the Pro Max because it is the flagship.
Oh, yeah. Well, the other thing is you're not going to get, if it's only got two cameras, you're not even going to get the flagship experience from the Pro Max carried over. And honestly, with these Samsung ones, you didn't really either until just now, where they were able to add in all the cameras that you'd get on an Ultra, basically. I'm curious to see how long Apple's going to take to get to that trend, too. The other question I have is, would you take a thicker device with this foldable if it somehow allowed for the possibility to bring in Face ID over the Touch ID power button that's rumored for this device, which is also on these Samsung foldables and most other foldables? They have some sort of face unlock. That's not the same as what Face ID offers technically. And your main biometric authentication is the side button, which I do not like at all. Maybe Apple will have a better implementation, but I don't love it. So I'm curious what you would do.
I don't feel overly strongly about this. I mean, it's been years since I've had Touch ID on an iPhone at this point. But as far as I remember, with all my experiences with Touch ID, it's incredibly reliable. On the iPhone, especially the iPads now,
You're thinking circular button. That's easier. That makes more sense with your thumb. This is an elongated button, and it's very weird. It's not my favorite. Even with on the iPads, like you were saying,
it's not as good on the iPads as it is on the iPhones.
No, and that's how it is on this. So I'm thinking it's going to be a lot like that, and that's what
it's
I
a good
don't
point.
Like.
I mean, ideally, actually both would be offered on the device. And I really hope that in the absolute long term here, there are two methods of authentication where you can choose. Either you want the iPhone to go with whichever is first or faster. So maybe Face ID is an angle toward me, but I'm touching the fingerprint sensor, so it uses that. Or if Face ID is faster, then it goes straight to that. But the other option that would be more secure is it actually demands both kinds of authentication. So if you're really concerned about your cybersecurity, you can actually switch that on. I would like both options. But would I like a thicker device to accommodate Face ID? I think I would. I wouldn't mind a thicker device, actually, if it was the thickness of a current iPhone, if it folded. But weirdly, that isn't my main concern. My main concern is the loss of the telephoto camera, because these two cameras that are going on the foldable iPhone next year are just like the standard iPhones of today. So we've got the main or wide camera and the ultra wide. I use that telephoto so much, even at 5X, I use it at least as much as I use the main camera. I take a huge number of pictures with that longer reach.
Remember when you hated the idea of that newer telephoto lens and how long that focal length was?
I mean, it did take some getting used to, but it's actually not as big of a difference as I thought it would be. And in the long run here, if Apple it's supposed to move to a 48 megapixel sensor this year. If that increases the throw to 7X, if you can then dial it back and crop into 3.5X, then that will actually give it straight back to me as I was used to it. So I'm not too worried about where the telephoto camera is on the iPhone. If anything, I'm quite excited about its future, because we're going to 48 megapixels this year. And 3 years after that, it probably will have a variable aperture as well. I currently know, and I'm already contending with this predicament, which is crazy, really, considering that we are well over a year away from when I will actually spend my money on this device. But I am already trying to think, do I go for an iPhone 18 Pro that has that camera that I love? Or do I go for the first foldable iPhone that is actually going to make me not have an inferior version of that camera, but give it up completely? And I don't know what the answer to that question is.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to find out with the Air. Are you going to try the Air this year?
Probably not, because of pretty much the same reason. I would be very interested in the Air, but I can't see myself dropping to a single camera. I also actually, over the last year, have become a pretty big user of the ultra-wide camera. I never used to like the ultra-wide camera. Before the iPhone 16 Pro, it was relatively unusable other than for just practical purposes. Like if you needed to give an impression of scale, but it was never for photography. You could never get anything that looked nice out of it. Mm-hmm. Now, it just looks fantastic. And it's really useful in a lot of situations. Like over the past couple of weeks when I've been traveling and visiting new places, if I've wanted to give an impression of scale, the ultra wide is fantastic. So I'm very reluctant to give that up on the iPhone 17 Air. I'm just too attached to the camera system. But a foldable display and the ability to open it out is very appealing to me. I mean, I'm a big Kindle user. And although I would be reluctant to lose e-ink, a little foldable form factor would be perfect for me in a lot of situations. I also used to love the iPad mini. So Apple's really pulling me here two different ways. And these are the compromises with a first generation device, but it might not be until the second or third generation of this device. I expect the second generation probably won't be redesigned. It might be the third version or maybe even the fourth when they finally put this camera on there.
So next year you're telling me Apple comes out with this foldable, you're going to buy what?
Probably an 18 Pro.
Oh my gosh. You're not even going to give it a shot on the first gen.
I mean, I would love to. I really would love to. And I might change my mind, but I just don't know if I can live without that telephoto camera. I don't know if I can do it.
You got to at least take it for a spin for a couple weeks. You still got that return period. That's a very valid reason to try it out. Try it out. If you find out you can't live without that telephoto lens, then, and the same thing with the Air this year, honestly.
The thing is, I would get used to it, but I know that there would be occasions when I would think, I really wish I could get closer here, and I just can't. Yeah. And that would be something that would bother me. And also, this is a device, and we know this from first generation products, that will be fairly limited. I mean, we feel it today with the Vision Pro, which fairly soon is getting a significant specification bump. The Vision Pro feels like a first generation device, but we see this elsewhere. I mean, think of the first generation Apple Watch Ultra is fairly dramatically different from the second generation. It's a lot slower. And when we look at what we're moving to with the third generation now, if you had that first generation Apple Watch Ultra, I'm sure that it performs great and it still feels like a polished device because basically it is just a Series 9, but with a beefier casing. It still feels first generation. It just does. Yeah. And in terms of selling these devices on, how much is a first generation Apple Watch Ultra worth now? How much will a first generation Vision Pro be worth in a couple of years compared to how much you paid for it? And this is a $2,000 phone. If you want to upgrade your storage, maybe it's going to be $2,200. And a year after that, 18 months after that, I mean, you're not going to get that. You'll get $700 for selling it. So that's also on my mind.
Fair points. A couple other things with the foldable in terms of specs. We have a 7.8-inch outer display or inner display. So that's what happens when you unfold it. And a 5.5-inch outer display. In comparison to Samsung, I just want to see, unless you have it off the top of your head. I know the inner display is 8 inches. They just bumped up to that. But what's the outer display? That's pretty big, isn't it?
I'm not sure. I feel like it is bigger than 5.5 inches.
I think it's a lot bigger than that, honestly.
But for what it's worth, I love the idea of a 5.5-inch outer display
too.
Because that is actually a little bigger than an iPhone mini. I mean, we've been talking about how much we miss the iPhone mini, and this basically would be that, right? The iPhone 12 and 13 mini were 5.4 inches, just a tiny little bit over that.
Okay, so this is crazy if these rumors are actually true. I haven't really put in much thought about the outer screen. I've thought about the potential of like, oh, you fold, you know, so 5.5 is going to be really small, like pretty much the smallest in its class in terms of like the US-based foldables. And really, there's only two options right now. There's Google's Pixel 9 Pro Fold. And honestly, I thought that outer screen was kind of perfect because it's wider. It feels a lot like a real phone. And it's not super big. It's only 6.3 inches, which is still pretty significantly bigger than the 5.5 that's rumored. The Z Fold 7 is 6.5, a full inch bigger. And it's obviously still pretty narrow and tall, though Samsung is working on getting that rectified. And they did a much better job this year. But it's still, you know, awkward. You have one hand. There's no way I can reach up to the top.
5.5 inches might actually be really good. Like, I'm super into this idea.
And I think that that blends well with Apple's ethos and what I can imagine them saying about this device, which is, well, if you can just open it up and get access to this big display, why do you need a big display on the outside? You just need something for quick access to your apps. You know, you want to check the Maps app when you're walking along, whatever it may be. You've got something available for that. But then you can open it out if you need to. That feels like it's a much more cogent argument to me than, okay, we're going to give it a massive display and then an even more massive display on the inside.
So here's my concern, though. How does that look? What is the shape of this? Because my guess is you need to get it at least 6+ inches in order for 7.8 or 8 inches to make sense when it unfolds. It's kind of more like a, what is this? More like a rectangle? No, it's more square. It's like a square. 5.5, if they want to keep it this size when it unfolds in this shape, there's going to be significant bezel then, right? In order to make up for the lack of space? I'm having a hard time visualizing this.
I don't think
this.
So. I mean, these display diagonally. This would be diagonal. The diagonal measurements of display sizes don't indicate aspect ratio in any way.
True.
So Apple does some strange things with aspect ratio. Like, say the iPad mini is a really weird long aspect ratio compared to something like the 13-inch iPad Pro, which is way more squarish. The MacBooks are really consistent. But Apple has changed the aspect ratio of the iPhone over the years. Something like the iPhone 5 was really long and tall compared to the iPhone as it is today. So I can imagine that this will be totally different. I actually imagine it being a little bit more like a Pixel foldable.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. The Pixel foldables were perfect, but that was still 6.3 inches. That's still pretty big compared to 5.5.
I imagine it'll be just a little smaller.
Okay, so I hope it is like that. What's the first gen like, actually? Because that was also the same. Pixel first gen foldable outer screen size. That is definitely a long Google search. Yeah, that was 5.8 inches. Okay, so that makes a little bit more sense. And the inner display was, what was that? That was 7.6 inches. So yeah, it's going to be more in my mind now that I'm visualizing this a lot like the first foldable from Google, which was, I mean, I really liked that one too. I feel like there was some pretty decent sized bezels on it though. So I'm just a little worried about that outer display. And if we're going to start bringing in these chunky top and bottom, what if they just made it a like iPhone 8 top and bottom? They put Touch ID on the front somehow. That would be funny.
Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But
not ideal.
I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this device is positioned, because the iPhone 17 Air, mm-hmm, is this kind of semi-premium device that sits between the Pro models and the standard model, and actually offers something different. So very recently, we've had the rumor that that's going to be the device with a titanium frame now. Titanium will be on no other models, but it'll be on that one. And also,
so ridiculous.
It's going to be, obviously, we know it's going to be super thin, and it's going to have Apple's custom modem, and none of the other models are expected to get that this year, just that one and obviously the iPhone 16e. But the foldable next year will be the same, and we don't know yet exactly what chip it's going to have, but we know that the technology is based on the iPhone 17 Air. So it wouldn't surprise me if the foldable is not a Pro device. It's just a foldable iPhone. And that means
that you get
a standard chip, you get two cameras instead of three on the back, you get no possibility to have a SIM, it has to be an eSIM, you only get a single speaker to save space, the same compromises. And you compare that to the Pro models that will be cheaper, but actually offer a Pro experience.
So I feel like the people who genuinely buy a foldable device like this, where it gets bigger, not the flip, are pro users or tech nerds. And then there's like a 0.1% of those people that just thought it looked cool and they have no reason for it, but they bought it anyways, because why not? I also have to acknowledge that Samsung doesn't quite have the share, the phone sales volume as Apple would, right? I mean, that would, I would expect Apple to just maybe in the future overtake that if these are really good. But as of right now, obviously Samsung's just dominating the foldable game. There's really no competition in the US. So I just don't know if people will, the non-tech, non-pro people will just buy it just because it's a new Apple phone and they think it's cool. And, you know, like, I don't know what that bump's going to be, but like, I feel like this has to be positioned. The point of my story has to be positioned as a pro device, right? Like, what else would you need this for?
I don't think it will be. I think it will be very similar to the iPhone 17 Air, where what you're being sold on is not its how advanced its technology is. You're being sold on its design and the fact that it's taken a different direction. So with the Pro models, you get three different cameras, you get all these Pro camera features. With the iPhone 17 Air, what Apple is going to say to you is, this single camera is so good, it's all you need. This is our main fusion camera, and it uses all these different technologies and our amazing sensor to provide the best single camera experience we've ever offered. And that is a totally different positioning. That goes hand in hand with saying, we've got this totally new form factor. It's doing something completely different. And we're coming at this device from a different direction, and we're trying to appeal to different people. And if you want to come along for this ride, then this is the device for you.
I think Apple could have done this. Yeah, I mean, either way, I don't think it's going to make a huge difference, but that makes sense for the Air, that marketing plan, the camera excuse, like, it makes total sense. I feel like they could have squeezed another camera on here. It's not impossible. There's no, in my opinion, there's no huge engineering issues. Plenty of companies are putting multiple cameras in. You just got to get a little creative with how you're positioning it. I feel like they could have made this like the ultimate creator, you know, pro device. Look at these great cameras. Look at how quickly you can edit on a bigger screen. Get that content out. You can flex it up and, like, I don't know, film yourself or something. Like, there's so many opportunities, and they could have been like, oh, it unfolds into an iPad. Use the Apple Pencil, maybe. I have no idea. Like, I feel like they could have done all of this only to then position its first foldable as like a, I don't know, an Air that can expand. Kind of brings down the hype a little bit, don't you think?
I think it does, but Apple is behind here. And I think it's going to, we are going to get there. And eventually, of course, I can foresee basically every other iPhone model being discontinued in favor of foldables. I think eventually that's where the smartphone market is going. I think 10 years from now, there is going to be no single slab iPhone. The way that this is going to go is we're going to do three or four generations of this high-end foldable iPhone where they will add more and more features and make that into a pro model. And once they've got that to a pro level, then they're going to say, okay, well, here's the, if that's going to be the high-end model, well, here's a low-end model, which is $1,500. And it's available in some brighter colors and it doesn't have as many cameras and it's just the same as the standard models. And the prices have been raised. We've got past this issue of naming, and we're in a slightly different era for smartphones. But I'm pretty convinced that's where it's going.
What about this? This is, for those of you who can't see what I'm holding, this is the Samsung Galaxy Z Flip 7. Where does this fall in? Because I agree that if they're going to do this and no more slab phones, this is kind of how you cater to those people who want a slab style phone, but it's still foldable.
Potentially, but I think that Apple, as much as we believe they've researched that form factor, I think that the more I thought about it, that form factor is a gimmick in a way that the other one isn't, because the other one is a standard phone that unfolds to be an iPad, whereas that is just a phone that happens to become half the size. That's basically all it does. Like, it's just a it's just being able to fit that in your pocket with double the thickness but half the size.
Oh, sorry, it's no little Samsung chime.
There's no meaningful experience that's enhanced by using that.
Disagree. For a very specific subset of people, imagine for you it's not as long as it is for me. Go back and you're 14 years old. I mean, I feel like teenagers these days would eat this up if this was an Apple device. Just unfortunately, we have to push we can't put this aside, but the fact that it's Apple, that'll sell just because of name alone. Okay. You know, there are teenagers that could buy this right now, but they're not because they want an iPhone, they want iMessage. You get a form factor like this in their hands with Snapchat and Instagram and all of these, you know, social media websites. People think of the selfies that you're taking on this thing. They have so many different features dedicated just for the camera alone. Being able to customize this outer display, look at it quickly. Like, you know, I'm thinking of like 15-year-old, 16-year-old kids, smaller hands. They don't want a fold they don't need that. They just want something like this. That's cool. That's going to look nice. And then when they need a big screen, they can just unfold it. I haven't set this one up yet, by the way. But I just feel like that's going to be a hit for a different subset of people.
But it's a smaller market. And I don't think that Apple is really interested in making specific iPhones for specific markets. I think that it tries to broadly make sure that the iPhone lineup caters for everyone in a very flat way. Creating models for everyone, but because they're specific and have these little differences. Apple creates one experience, and right now that's this slab with a notch or a dynamic island and a USB-C port, and that is just the same at different price points. That is what I imagine they will do with a foldable. They will come up with, okay, we like this aspect ratio, we like this outer display, we like this method of authentication, this is how all the internal engineering works. And this is a more marketable device to a larger number of people because it's more practical. And so we will just iterate on that across the lineup. And maybe they will, but having two different kinds of foldable is the sort of thing that Samsung would do, not the kind of thing that Apple would do.
Yeah, but I feel like it's a different Apple these days. And we say that, but we're just clinging on to things of the past. I feel like the fact that they're even making a foldable shows us that they're not the same anymore. And I agree with you that it's probably going to go that way, but I also think that they're not catering to a certain group of people, but they kind of are. No one needs this. People are totally fine with
no one needs it, but Apple needs to have things to iterate on. And the fact is, the iPhone in its current form has a lot of material limitations on where it goes from here. And if Apple doesn't move to foldables, what are they really able to do with this device over the next 10 or 20 years? Battery technology can improve, but that will ultimately just result in the device getting a bit thinner and having slightly longer battery life. But it's a static thing now. Like, how much better can these cameras get? They can add variable aperture. They can increase the size of the sensor. They can increase the number of megapixels. They can put a better anti-reflective coating on the display. They can keep doing these things. Put Thunderbolt on there. Make the speakers better. But this is a device that is so mature now. I mean, it's a bit like a Mac. Like, how much more can we really do to the Mac or Mac OS? This is something that's been iterated on now for 30 years. Mm-hmm. So foldables make sense because it's a new challenge and a new form factor. And it is a way to keep pushing those iPhones out the door for another 10 years. It's a way of selling them for more money as well and making that feel justified. It's a way of reshaping the lineup and actually a way of making the experience feel different. I mean, we still remember what a big deal it was with the iPhone X. That was a big deal, moving to OLED, reducing those bezels, introducing Face ID. That was a really big deal. The foldable would be even bigger than that. In lieu of the foldable, what can they do to it? Not a whole lot. So I think that's just where we are with it.
The question I want to end with, and I would like everyone to participate if you've made it this far, you know the deal, hit us up anywhere. But Hartley, I need to know your response. It's this is the fantasy world, so you're going to have to just take it the way I say it. Okay, you ready? Next year, there's no slab phones. There are only two foldables. There's a flip and a fold. You have to pick one. Which one would you pick right now? Don't even think about it. Just the first fold. Choice. Okay. Why?
Because it's actually practically useful.
But it's going to be it's going to be big, and this will be like basically an air folded down. And I know you don't like uncomfortable.
But
you know.
but say like in the example I gave of using it like an e-reader, I can't use the flip as an e-reader. I just use the flip in the same way I use my phone right now. Yeah. If I get the fold, it actually opens up this new world of content consumption and multitasking that you can't get on the other device. So for me, that's fairly straightforward.
Good point.
And I have a question for you, actually.
Okay.
Which is, what do you think it's going to be called? Because it's not going to be called the iPhone Fold.
No, I don't know. Because that's what makes the most sense. But I genuinely don't know. The only name in my head is iPhone Fold, because that's what we've been calling it. But like, what could they do?
I think it's going to be iPhone Ultra.
But see, don't even get me started, because I don't want to keep going on this. You can't call it that and then have two cameras, no telephoto, no Face ID, no premium features.
But it's the most expensive phone, and that's all people will see. It's like, it's the new thing. It's the foldable thing.
Dumb. You all need to realize this. Do not fall into that, people. That does not make any sense, personally. I'm not calling your take dumb. I'm calling the naming and the reason why people would go for it. It's not very smart. Don't do that.
I agree. But long term, it makes sense for it, because if they do get it to be the flagship iPhone, they're demanding a much higher price for it. I mean, what else are they going to do?
I don't know. I also don't know that I think at first I'm going to pick the Fold, right? Because I really do like using it. But I feel like after a while, I'm going to want a slab phone back.
Yeah, you're going to drop down to the iPhone 18 Pro Max.
Or if this in the scenario that I was talking about, I'm going to just pick this. I just don't know. Because sometimes I'll use the Fold for long periods of time, you know, especially when testing it. I'm using it pretty much all the time. And then I'll pick up my iPhone. I'm like, oh, yeah, this just feels right. Like, this just feels
comfortable.
But
do you not think that with how thin now the Fold 7 is, that will make a difference to how you feel about that? Because it does just feel like a slab phone when it's folded now.
Yeah, it does. It could also just be the fact that I'm coming from Android to iOS. And then I'm maybe, like, you know, there could be many different factors here. So I don't want to like, it just has to be, I need this phone. I need to see this phone. I need to use this phone. I'm tired of talking about it. We got a whole other year left, by the way. We haven't even mentioned we're looking like we're on track, right, for 2026 end of the year launch. So September, it's going to start to be what prototypes already began and should meet mass production and launch in 2026. So, I mean, that makes sense. I'm excited for it. Would love to hear from everyone else what you guys think. And let us know. We'll catch everybody in the next episode.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code Keller20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code Keller20. This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20. This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.